バルバラバルバパッパパッパバルバラバルバパッパパッパ。 If you're having trouble with your high school head, he's giving you the blues. You wanna graduate but not in his bed.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Beerly Legal. It's your weekly beer podcast. I'm your host, Mike Juggercans, and I'm here with my co-host.
Yo, what's up? It's Bob Beer Bob.
Bob Beer Bob and Mike Juggercans here. Always excited to be bringing you the latest and greatest in cold brew entertainment. And we have to remind you, we don't even touch any of that coffee shit. Just so you know, unless you know
unless
our set.
It's a cold brew beer.
That's what we always say. We only touch it if it's a cold brew beer. This week we got two special entries here. I'm going to be reviewing the one and only Chop Mod beer. Now, yes?
Sorry, that was my annoying old lady. Keep going.
Ironically, this is a bit of a coffee stout. So, again, it is in fact a
cold brew beer.
So, we are going to be talking about it. Let me give it a little tipsy here.
Oh, that sounded good. That sounded like a good sip, bro.
And you know what? It was a good one. All right, what do you got working with over here?
I got some beer, Bob.
Don't hit your fucking beer can on my computer.
Sorry, I got some.
You're gonna spill it now. Hey, Mike Juggercans over here.
I'm trying to. Well, I got some cow sand beer.
Now is bro, that one of them beaches where they got bovine?
Yeah,
cow sand.
Probably. Ready?
Yeah. Nice. Nice. Good sippage on the mic. What are you thinking about this cow sand? Going over the palate, under the tongue, right back around the molars. Classic. Classic tastage. You got this. You got this.
I almost had it. Tastes like a salty bar snack, bro.
Salty bar snack. Well, this has been Beerly Legal Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now for our outro.
Beerly Legal.
Hello, everybody. This is actually the Bargain Den.
Tricked you.
No.
Go ahead.
The Bargain Den.
At night.
I've been having to wait for you to say catchphrases all 3 minutes of this episode. My name is Brandon.
My name is Donna.
And normally we just watch random movies and tell you whether or not they're frugal or not, but now we're actually doing a bit of a deeper dive on all the films of M. Night Shyamalan, leading us to our final stretch of films here with 2006 Lady in the Water. So we are going to be spoiling that film.
Spoil it!
Talking about it, talking about what we thought about it, and some stuff. So let's kick things off. Lady in the Water follows Cleveland, played by Paul Giamatti, as he is the maintenance attendee at an apartment complex in Pennsylvania. And things start to go a bit strange up and awry in and around the apartment complex where somebody seems to be swimming late at night.
Finally, Cleveland, Heap, Mr. Heap to most, finds the culprit. There is someone swimming in the water, and he tries to go in after them, doesn't manage to catch them. So he gets out of the pool, and when he does, he slips. He wakes up in his apartment. Someone has carried him there, and that someone is the culprit. She's there in his apartment.
Bryce Dallas Howard plays Story, who's actually a narf.
She's a narf.
She's a narf fairy. She's a water nymph who has come to tie things together in this world or something. And it's up to the people of the apartment to get her back to the Flying Eagle and keep her safe from the grass wolves and kind of the grass monkeys.
Yeah, so the thing is, the water nymphs tell man things that help keep the balance, but man stopped listening to the water nymphs, and this water nymph is special. It turns out she's the queen, Narf, and she doesn't know it, but she finds out. And we're finding out all of this lore through one of the tenants of the apartment. She translates from her mother's Korean to tell a story that her grandmother told about the Narfs.
So they all have to work together to save Story and find out who plays what roles to bring her to safety.
And
they do it.
They do it. They've got everything set up. They read the signs and they set up a big party under the guise of welcoming the new tenant, who's a film critic, and have it all set up on the last night so that the Eagle can come pick up Story safely without any interference.
But they get a little bit wrong, so there's a little bit of confusion, but then they get the pieces together and are able...
For real this time.
For real this time, and are able to send Story off to safety.
And she makes it.
Looks like she made it.
The end.
What did you think of this movie, Donna?
I loved this movie. What did you think, Brandon?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was really good. It was, you know, I this is like kind of like my second and a half, maybe third watch. I had seen it at least one other time. I think the time before that it was kind of hit like in and out kind of thing, where I was too young to formulate the memories, which is sad because I would have been like 12. when this came out. But yeah, it's something I think you have to meet it at its level. Like, if you want a horror film, this is not that. If you want like a intense drama, this is not that. I mean, it is dramatic, but I mean, I think all in all, it's a fairy tale. It's a fantasy little fairy tale thing.
You know, I watched this movie shortly after it came out, but I only watched the first maybe 10, 15 minutes of it. I was having a sleepover and my friends were like, let's watch Lady in the Water. And I was like, okay. And turns out if you don't pay attention to the first like 5 minutes where they heavily go over the lore, it doesn't make any fucking sense.
That is true.
So
yeah.
I stopped watching the movie because talking happened. So I'm really glad we rewatched it without so much distraction.
Yeah, let's see what some other people have to say on Letterboxd.
Box, 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 boxed in.
I'm going to read the three most popular reviews. These are longer reviews, but I like all of them. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
So Matt Lynch gave it 3 stars. Matt Lynch gave it 3 stars and says, this corpse has been picked over plenty and while I stipulate that it's a bit undercooked and pretty silly on a rewatch, I think it's one of those things you just have to deliberately slide into, which makes sense given that it's all of a piece with Signs and the Village in its depiction of an insular community or group united by belief. You can choose to read Bob Balaban's character as a snipe at all critics. That's the critic character we mentioned. Or you can take it as a representation of blanket, unfeeling skepticism. Up to you. Anyway, Shyamalan may exhibit all manner of ill-advised creative hubris, but that doesn't make his exceptional capabilities as a visual filmmaker. It doesn't mask his exceptional capabilities. It's hard to make an ugly movie with Christopher Doyle shooting, but the way everything here is either behind a visual obstruction like a tree or a shower curtain, or shot through a portal like a window or a door, or the constant grid patterns that pop in, say, the courtyard of the apartment complex, or even just the design of a blanket. All this suggests that the world is porous, that there's something on the other side if you choose to see it. This isn't a great movie, but it's a great example of how something unusual and even rewarding can get tossed aside just because it's uncool.
That's a well thought out review. I like that.
Silent Dawn gave it 4.5 stars. M. Night Shyamalan's penchant for isolated communities, totems of loss and tragedy, and eccentric fantastical concepts is given its most inwardly emotional landscape in Lady in the Water. An apartment complex, The Cove, is situated as a battleground for Shyamalan's anger towards the Iraq War, his bruised ego, and his critics, while manifesting as a convoluted and at times cloyingly sincere bedtime story. But there's real pain buried deep down. And Shyamalan, teaming up with the famed DP Christopher Doyle, works with his collaborators to bring all of it all to the surface. It's such a fragile movie. Watching Lady in the Water, it seems to fall apart again and again, while Shyamalan picks up the scattered pieces and gently glues it back together in the same instance. This film is so personal that its primary function is to be therapeutic. It's not for everyone, clearly, but Shyamalan's formal elegance and imaginative and rigorous is, sorry, his formal elegance is imaginative and rigorous, which is more than I can say for 90% of today's studio fare. The performances from Paul Giamatti and Bryce Dallas Howard often speak louder than words. The connections aren't just physical, but bridge a spiritual reconciliation, a time for healing. And then quoting the film, I love you all. I love you all so much.
Wow. That's a very nice review. I like that a lot.
Yeah. It's okay if I read one more. It's kind of long as well, but.
No.
No?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. This last one is from Arthur Tuto, who gave it 5 stars. This review I had to translate from, I believe, Spanish? Portuguese, pardon me. I think only a Picha Pong, which is a Thai director, who is responsible for another, he's one of the most famous Thai directors, believes in the suggestive power of oral history as much as Shyamalan. And it is a belief in the sense of a mystical faith, faith in a fanciful mythology that has been lost, an essential narrative mythology that starts from the infantilization of some elements precisely to reveal a primary and powerful sense of things. Best of all, Shy does it with humor as witty as it is eccentric. The whole day-to-day The whole day-to-day relocation of this film starts from a half-frontal ridicule of things, but it is precisely the faith of these ridiculous elements that makes them great. Apart from a whole sense of union that the collective environment generates, a union that is intrinsically linked to the condominium device, as it is also in the device of the community of Avia. And the fact that the film never goes beyond the gates of the condominium is very revealing in this sense, a bit as if it needed to preserve itself, as if it were necessary to create a separate everyday fantasy world in order to believe again.
I really like that all of those reviews touched, like they gave importance and credence to this community aspect. I really like that.
The reason I wanted to read all of them is they all hit on elements that community aspect of it, as well as the kind of underlying ties to like mythological, like storytelling, as well as, like the notes on like Shyamalan's disappointment in the Iraq War and everything like that.
Yeah. I thought that was particularly poignant because obviously like, that's very specifically included multiple times of like the TV news coverage of the war. And so it's like, well, that's there for a reason. And I hadn't thought about that, but it makes perfect sense.
Well, where it stands out more to me, and again, I did not catch this watching it, but is the character that Shyamalan plays himself, who is the one that the story has destined to be the kind of catalyst for great change in the world. She is the one who, he is the one who is going to write a book that is going to later change the ideas and concepts of one man who is going to change the world. And he's saying he's writing something called The Cookbook. And he says just a bunch of ideas about how like leaders should operate and how to kind of like change structure and stuff like that. And I think it's really an interesting thought because I'm really happy to have read that because I would have never picked up on that. That's what he's trying to do. like it's such a veiled kind of thing. It's so not up in somebody's face about what it is he's like talking about, but it totally makes sense for, you know, 2006, the state of the United States at this time, to be talking about that in that way. Like, it takes time, but that's how he's going to do it. He's a storyteller, and that's the power of stories, is to change the world through those ideas.
Mm. That's very nice. I also thought this movie was just incredibly sweet. Like, Paul Giamatti plays the sweetest, most gentle, lovable character I think I might have ever seen in a film. Like, I want to reach through the screen and give him a big old hug.
Yeah.
And he's going to, like, very much avoid the hug, and I'm going to feel even more tender towards him for it, you know?
Yeah. This is dipping a bit into 30 Trivia, but, I mean, this film is Shyamalan wrote this as a adaptation of a bedtime story he would tell his own children. And I don't know. I think it's something that's so interesting, the ties between the artist and their work, a lot of times being compared to that of their children, and then kind of bridging the gap and making art out of something that you do for your children. I don't know. There's a lot there to kind of chew on as far as like what all this could mean for an individual.
Well, and so The Last Airbender came out before this movie, right? Do I have that right?
No, it came out after. This movie was not received well. This is the start. This was nominated for a Razzie.
So there was this one, which is based on the bedtime story he made up for his children, right?
Right.
And then I guess a couple of years later, he makes The Last Airbender. And what I've often heard about that is that he made it for his kids. Like, he wanted to take on this project because his kids like Avatar. And I feel like this really hit the mark. And it's interesting that there is that kind of series of, I don't know if series, but these two movies that he made for his children that were very poorly received. But I don't know. And maybe that's the difference between Lady in the Water and The Last Airbender. But I feel the love and the personal connection and the beauty in Lady in the Water. And I feel like The Last Airbender was just trying to be something it wasn't.
Do you want to get kind of bummed out?
Okay.
I had to double check that this was nominated for a Razzie. It was. It actually also won 2 Razzies. It was nominated for 4. It was also nominated for 7 and won 3 The Stinkers Bad Movie Awards, which I've never heard of. At the Razzies, it won Worst Supporting Actor, M. Night Shyamalan, and Worst Director, M. Night Shyamalan.
What the fuck? Why did they beat up on him so bad?
It was nominated for Worst Picture and Worst Screenplay. And then at the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards, it was nominated for Worst Picture, Worst Sense of Direction, Stop Them Before They Direct Again, Worst Screenplay, and Worst Ensemble.
That's just mean.
It won Worst Supporting Actress.
And, actress?
Yeah.
For who?
The same as Most Annoying Fake Accent, Cindy Chong. As well as the winner of the Least Scary Horror Movie. Jesus.
Holy. We don't have to list all the mean things everyone said about this movie.
It's just, no, I mean, but like, okay, I was confused. I didn't know how many, I didn't realize that there were so many, there's so many awards shows for bad movies.
It's because people like being hateful.
Yeah. Goodness gracious. Yeah. Village Voice Film Poll and then Yogo Awards also gave it some flack as well.
While you look for whatever you are looking for, I'm going to take this moment to tell the audience that I'm looking at the IMDb page and I'm staring into Bryce Dallas Howard's gorgeous freaking face, and I think I might be falling in love.
Okay. Never mind. Anyway, yeah, people are mean, and specifically towards this movie.
Can I just say, I thought the acting was great. I will say the accent was annoying and weird. I think that was maybe overplayed or overdirected.
I did see in Thrifty Trivia that that actress...
She's not Korean, is she? Sorry.
I don't know, but I did see that this was like kind of her first role, and her manager, like M. Night was like, yeah, we would like to hire her. And then her manager was like, okay, $1 million. And M. Night was like, I thought we were going to do industry standard of $60,000. Yeah. And then they had to settle on $100,000.
That seems fair. I don't know. It sucks because like people don't.
I'll say this about that particular character and role. It is a very, very exaggerated Asian accent. And I don't feel qualified to speak on it. 100%. As to people living in Asia, not many people at all sound like that. I will say I have met a few, like not quite that like way, but I mean like people, I don't know. It seems like a weird choice.
It is definitely fake. I mean, I feel like it's obvious that it was exaggerated regardless. Right. But I just did look up, and according to, I guess, her Wikipedia, so for what that's worth, I realize that's not foolproof. Cindy Chung is an American actress. She was born in California, of Chinese descent. Just saying that the accent was a little much, but I really liked everyone's acting. And also, I feel like that kind of plays into the whole fairy tale thing of this, right? Like, everyone's... Everyone's exaggerated, and you've got, I think that also helps to believe, like, part of this, I think kind of the twist of this is that you think the film critic is going to be important to the story because the story starts with him and he provides key answers, but then he dies unceremoniously because he's wrong, because he sees everything as a predictable film plot, right? And like everyone's exaggerated in that way. And that's what makes it makes you believe him when he says like, oh, you're looking for this kind of character. Look for that. Because that's everyone in this apartment complex. Like everyone's very niche and almost a caricature, right? Like the dad who does crossword puzzles. That is all we ever see him do. I don't think we ever see the dad not holding a crossword puzzle. And to the point where his son's like, remember when you forgot to pick me up from school? Like, it's very exaggerated. So it's just funny to think, like, I feel like there was a purpose behind that. And I don't feel like that makes M. Night a bad director by any means. I think that makes him very purposeful. And maybe I'm giving him too much credence because I really enjoyed the movie. But
well, and I think it's something that we see in his other movies as well. I mean, I think we talked about it last in Old, but M. Night clearly loves movies. Like, and I think that M. Night is wise in understanding that, like, this is a movie, you know? Like, oh gosh, I just heard a really good quote on this and I'll have to try and remember it. But like, sometimes we forget, like, the easiest solution to problems in creative work or in, you know, any kind of project where you're trying to tell a story, is that, you know, things you're operating in a reality that is not our own, you know, and you're operating in a narrative that is not a life narrative. Like we're not trying to catch an honest to God slice of life because the moment that the camera cuts, you are not showing that. I mean, and that's just one element of it. There's so many different elements that make it not life. And so like, I think that at times, maybe more than others, M. Night does dance around reality. And I think this is a huge example of him dancing around reality a lot, but like are a lot of the characters in this very subtle? No, they're very on the nose. But like you're saying, like, it's a fairy tale. They're very exaggerated, and it's like they don't, he has only so much time to get these characters across to you, and a huge cast of characters.
There are so many important characters in this movie.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that if you meet it on its level and you go, this is a fairy tale, and you understand that this is a father trying to adapt the story that he has made up for his children to film, like, you don't have time to, like, do the deep backstories, you know?
Well, and it just fits. And I also love how, like, even, like, a Grimm fairy tale, for example, like Brothers Grimm, it has that dark kind of morbid side to it, right? Like, story almost dies, and it's pretty brutal. Like, she gets attacked by a very scary wolf that blends into the grass. Like, you cannot see it most of the time. It's very scary. Just like, I mean, the fairy tales are actually very grim and scary. Like, someone I was talking to recently was saying that, like, well, that's because fairy tales are a warning to children, right? Like, and it makes sense that way. Like, I mean, the big bad wolf is a big bad wolf, and he ate Little Red Riding Hood's grandma. Like,
yeah.
It's not pretty, and he's exaggerated, and everyone's like a bit of a caricature. So I think it's just very fitting for this whole idea of it being a fairy tale, a myth, a lore story. And I really like the execution. Like a lot of the reviews that you read said, that it's all just in this one apartment complex, because also with that many characters, it helps to have a simple setting. Like, we're not constantly moving around. Like, I can keep track of all these people because we're always here.
Right. Yeah. I will say, I mean, just to play the devil's advocate, because clearly you and I are fans of this, the only few elements that I didn't super enjoy, but I can understand why they're there, are a few of the action sequences involving the wolf, were just kind of depicted in ways that I don't much care for. There is like a stutter stop fast forward motion that was used a couple of times, like when the film critic was attacked, where it's like they like move the camera very quickly, and then also, or I think they like move the camera slowly and then they put it in fast motion, so it's like, and then like, I don't know why, that just is not either scary or very good looking to me, just personally, as like a film fan, like somebody doing, like, that was really popular in like the early 2000s. Like, a lot of movies did that, and it just looks very dated and not very interesting. And then they also did a thing where they slowed down the film at one point when the wolf breaks through the glass and attacks Story. And that was just kind of strange to me. Now, I could understand the justifying being for the fact that this is, again, not supposed to really be a horror movie. So it's supposed to, like, just letting us live in that moment for a minute, you know, like, it's a very serious pinnacle moment to the film. But that's just, those are just the few, like, a little, like, nitpicky things. Yeah, I mean, otherwise, I very much enjoyed it.
No, that's definitely fair. So can we talk about whether this has the hallmarks of an M. Night Shyamalan film?
Yeah.
Okay. So first off, M. Night Shyamalan wrote, directed, and produced this, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we've got the trifecta of titles. We also have M. Night in a role in the film. Less of a cameo, more of a role, but still, I count it. This does not have a focus on young children, but it does have an important character who is a young child.
I would say it also, I mean, I think it has an important focus on Paul Giamatti's child and wife.
That's true. But I mean, like, a lot of his other movies star young children. Like, they are key to the story, right? This one is, but like, it's more of on the fringes and comes back around as a surprise at the end. Speaking of, there is a twist. We have the twist at the end where everything they had was wrong and they have to like redo it, right? What else? Oh, it's in the Northeast US in Pennsylvania. So that's obviously Hallmark M. Night. I think that's about it. Yeah. Oh, awkward dialogue. That exists for sure. Absolutely, positively. Not by any means like happening level, but it's pretty good. So yeah, I think this fits very well as a quintessential M. Night Shyamalan movie. I think that you could say, if you wanted to get a feel for M. Night, you could watch this movie.
I've got a Quora answer, question and answer, and it's not particularly funny, but I wanted to read it. What happens if you work out only one side of your body?
What?
Working out the muscles on one side of our bodies can keep the muscles on the other side fit, even if we do not move them at all. If you sprain an ankle or break a wrist this summer and cannot use one of your limbs, the muscles there will weaken and shrink unless you exercise those same muscles in your other limb. So that wasn't really a good answer that somebody gave to that, but I just wanted to see if it was possible because of the one character in this movie that only exercises one body. That was like the thing I most remember from this movie as a kid.
Well, what I was understanding from that answer was that like you can only exercise one side of your body, but it's still going to slightly work the other side, is what I was understanding. Like
it kind of said both was the thing.
But it fits though. It fits the image of the, what was his name? This is important. You know, here's some trivia I'd like to know is how they made that look. Reggie, played by Freddie Rodriguez. Reggie only works out one side of his body, and it fits with that answer because the other side is not like weak and pathetic looking. Like he still looks fit on the other side. Like he has musculature. That's very clear, but it's just the side he works out is like super buff, like professional weightlifter buff. And then the side he doesn't work out is like, oh, it's a strong man. Like he probably works out, you know?
No trivia I could find on that.
God, because I would, can you imagine if an actor took on this role and just went super meta and like legit worked out half their body? One side for like a year training up for this. Like, this is the kind of shit I would do if I was acting. I'd be like, give me that role now because I'm going to go so hard. I'm going to blow your fucking mind. Go ahead and fire the CG person you were going to have on my body because I'm going to just do it. And it's going to be insane. I'm taking steroids. I'm taking protein powder. We're going to make this so fucking rad. And that's what I like to imagine that Freddie Rodriguez did.
Well.
But my guess is that realistically they did some CG.
Yeah, prosthetic or something. That's been Lady in the Water. I'm glad you like Bryce Dallas Howard because she's in The Village too.
Yes.
I saw an image recently because she's also in the new Jurassic Park movies.
Is that who that is? That makes sense. She's the main love interest, right?
Yeah. And they showed...
Running in high heels. Incredible.
They showed a picture of her in the most recent one that just was released. And somebody was like, lol, they had to CGI out Bryce Dallas Howard's butt because her butt was much larger. Like, then there was like a picture of real her, like a side profile. And they had like cut out her butt from like the film.
Why the fuck would they do that?
I don't know.
That bodacious butt. Who would do... Why can't we appreciate a nice toned glute? Tush. You know? What the... Why would you do that?
Because it's... Look, it's not realistic, okay?
That's fucking weird. Like, you don't see people CGI make women's boobs smaller. What? This doesn't track with what I understand about human attraction.
It's not realistic, Donna.
I'm so confused.
Donna, the dinosaurs, it's not realistic.
That is, yeah, that's the only unrealistic thing is her big badonkadonk. Like, okay, all right. I'm amazed. Like, I wonder how Bryce Dallas Howard feels about that. I wonder if that's real. Is that true? What if someone photoshopped the picture of her and not the movie?
I don't know. This is it's Newsweek. Claim Bryce Dallas Howard's butt was edited in Jurassic poster debunked.
Oh, so debunked. See, it doesn't make any sense. Why would you make your butt smaller?
Oh, okay. So, okay. Yeah. Not true. Here's the picture. If you want to see the picture. Turns out the photo was taken 10 months after the movie.
I also feel like what she's wearing is affecting this as well.
This is all a very silly conversation.
Let's all stare at her butt and scrutinize it in front of the world.
You were crushing on her. I wanted to help a brother out, you know?
Hey, speaking of which, it's Bob Beer Bob. I'm back because I figured out what this taste is, what it reminds me of. It's tamarind.
I was going to say that earlier, not because it tasted like that, but like it's the only weird salty thing we've had in a while.
It's got to be that weird salty thing.
Tamarind, well, mine's still tasting like a coffee stout. Do you want to thank some people? It's been 40 minutes.
Absolutely. First, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you, listener. I also appreciate Brandon, who edits this podcast. And if you don't like it, shut up. Yeah, I said it. And also, if you do like it, share it with
also,
a friend.
Also finds pictures of Bryce Dallas Howard's butt to show you.
Yeah, these are things Brandon does for me on the reg. I love him. And then I also want to thank Sarah Anastasia, who made our thumbnail art of us holding our cats. I'd also like to thank the Lounge Kittens for the use of their cover of Dirty Deeds that you hear bringing in the sweet tunes every time we start an episode and end it. I'd also like to thank Anchor.fm for hosting our podcast. And I want to thank our bargainer. Who's our bargainer this week, Brandon?
It's Jack3245. Thank you, Jack. We greatly appreciate it. Jack was the last person to leave us a review on iTunes Podcast, and that could be you as well. We'll say your name here and say thank you, Bart. You know, if your name is Brr, and then we'll say, thanks, Brr. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Brr.
Brr.
Like, you might have to include a pronunciation if it's something like that, but we might get it, too. Like, I don't know. I think we've guessed so far all right.
I am excited that we did get an email that I missed from back in July.
Yeah?
Because it was in the spam folder.
Dang it. I hate when that happens. I'm so glad you checked.
Yeah. Mazhar Barak writes, hello. Is this email monitored?
Yes.
So you can send us an email there too to thebargainedincast@gmail.com and we will check that out.
Clearly we get a lot of emails, so sometimes we miss one like that one. So
yeah, there were actually several in the spam folder. that we hadn't been paying attention. Oh, this one says urgent so response sad. Needed. Oh,
shit.
Yeah,
is,
sorry.
What is it?
This one's from Mrs. Ayaka Uzumi. Dear beloved one, I am Mrs. Ayaka Uzumi, 65 years old, deaf and a widow. I am married, married to late Inger Howard.
I know him.
Who worked with Shell Development. Yeah, probably you know him from Shell Development
right,
Company.
From Shell, yes.
In London, yeah.
Yes,
for 26 in years before he died in the year of 2017 in a car accident. Kind of just keeps going, you know.
Yeah.
All the memories sad. Flooding in. When my late husband was alive, he deposited the sum of £8,500. £8.5 million.
Oh, that's a big difference.
In a bank.
That makes sense. He was a Shell exec, you know.
Following my ill health, and then in brackets, cancer of the lungs.
Oh my God. Wait, what was she deaf, widowed, and lung cancer?
Yes.
Shouldn't
smoke. My doctor told me that I may not live longer than required due to. She may not live longer than required. I get that, dude. I don't want to live any longer than I'm required to due to my health condition. I'm looking forward to seeing someone who can use this money in charitable work. More details will be made known to you upon your response. Please go get back to me for further directives.
All right.
May God bless you, Mrs. Ayaka Azumi.
Oh, bummer. Are you responding?
I'm responding right
now. Okay, perfect. Yeah. You got to let her know. We're so sorry. It ended up in our spam for some reason, but we're happy to help with her charitable work. And I hope the lung cancer has not killed her before her required lifespan.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week for a new episode.
Sorry, this episode was such a bummer.
My name is Brandon.
My name is Donna.
Pinch those pennies.
And stay frugal.
Tartar sauce
taints
the
talons
of
tiki
torches.
But you ain't got the guts. She keeps nagging at you night and day, enough to drive.